everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of Modern Day Philosophers. I'm Danny Lobel. I'm your host. You are the listeners. You're out there enjoying your lives, making things happen, and tuning into this podcast. Thanks for doing so. As you can hear from my voice, I'm doing a lot better this week. It was very healthy for me to get out of LA and go to Seattle with Kylie. We had a wonderful time. We went to the zoo, which was a lot of fun. Zoos are always fun unless they're sad, broken-down zoos, in which case they're horribly depressing and soul-crushing. But this was not the case with the zoo in Seattle that we went to. It was really nice. We went all over. We went to Fremont Street, which is cool. They got a big Vladimir Lenin statue right there in the middle of the court. The courtyard. I don't know. They got a big Vladimir Lenin statue is what I'm trying to tell you. We went to a baseball game. Nobody was there, so we got to move forward and sit right behind home plate. And while the game was terribly boring, it was still fun being behind home plate, and the excitement of a ballpark is always great. Always love going to see any kind of sport live. It's always just a rush of energy, especially when it's full. But when it's empty, it's good too. It's just nice to be out and about. I love the city of Seattle. We went to the Folk Festival. We went to the Space Needle. We celebrated our 4-year anniversary, which was really cool. We had a lot of fun with that. And we had a lot of salmon. Seattle's a big salmon culture to begin with, but we were there during a time when I guess 2 weeks out of the year they have something called the Sockeye Copper River Salmon. And there's signs everywhere, banners, "The Copper River Salmon is here! The Copper River Salmon has arrived!" And I just was waiting for like a limo to pull up with a bunch of paparazzi surrounding it and screaming fans, like when the Beatles arrived. Just all these girls going crazy and fainting, and the door opens and these 4 salmon just flop out of the limo wearing sunglasses. One of them holds up a fin, like, "No pictures, please. The Sockeye Copper River Salmon have arrived." I connected with cousins of mine who I haven't seen since I was a baby, which was interesting. I learned a little more about my roots, where the Lobels come from, the Lobel clan. And I met up with a listener of this show, the very listener, in fact, who sponsored this week's episode. It was very cool. I got an email while I was there. And I should mention, I got a lot of emails from fans helping me through this time, losing my friend. And it's been really, really, really helpful getting these emails. The support has done a lot to help me. And this one listener emailed me, and she asked if she could sponsor an episode. And I was like, "Yes, of course. Please. Thank you." Anyone can sponsor an episode, by the way. Always very appreciated and not very expensive to do. And I said, "Where are you located?" And she said, "I'm in Seattle." I'm like, "We're in Seattle." And we all met up for coffee, Kylie and I, and the listener, whose name is Rachel, and she's really cool, and she lives with her mom, and she takes care of her mom, who has Alzheimer's, which is her full-time. It's what she does all day, every day. And she also asked that I mention this on the podcast, because if anybody else out there is going through something like that, she'd love to hear from you and get some support. And her website is called Consult Murray. And it's a website where she posts funny pictures. She has a little toy ninja called Shinobi, and she puts him in all these situations and creates this little world for him. And it's really fun and really creative and funny. And you can get in touch with her through the website, and it's really cool. So I really recommend you go to consultmurray.com. This week's sponsor, support those who support the show. We have a little family here. Keep it going. Keep the family alive. Say hi to Rachel. Reach out to her. And the website is spelled consultmurray.com. ConsultMurray.com. Go there today. Now, our episode coming up is with my buddy Mike Cirklin, who I've known as long as I've done comedy. He was doing it a year before I started in New York, and now we both live in LA. And we're going to talk about his time as a math teacher before he became a comedian. And we'll talk all about that, and we'll talk about education, and I'll tell you what, just listen for yourself, and you will hear everything we talk about. All right, everybody, enjoy the episode right after the intro song, My Talk with Mike Cirklin.
Hello, and welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
So how long have we known each other now? About 10, 11 years?
It's got to be around that time, right? Because I feel there was phases. There was when I first started, I knew some comics. You know, I'm sure you've gone through the phase. Like, you knew guys that were open, that you knew at the open mic phase.
And, right.
You know, they disappeared.
I think you were doing it even longer than me.
Yeah. No, I definitely was. I did my first show in 99, and then I got into it in 2000 when I did a New York's Funniest Teacher Contest sponsored by Stand Up New York. And I won the first round, and I'm like, this is great. And I'm getting interviewed by Scholastic Radio, and I'm going to be a star. I've been doing comedy 6 months. I'm going to be a star.
This Scholastic Radio, that's what everybody hopes and dreams for.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, they called me. I went downtown. It wasn't a glamorous studio like this one, but we were in a studio, and it's like, and I only did a couple open mics. I only did this one show, and, you know, my whole life was, you know, been in school. I really wasn't thinking about stand up at the time, and I'm getting called in by Scholastic Radio to do this interview about, you know. And then I learned about comedy and how hard the business is, because when I lost the contest, I got a letter from Scholastic Radio saying that my interview was cut. So so it's, don't enjoy your highs too high.
Even Scholastic Radio turned on you.
So everybody turned on me. But what it was good, it was I started going to Gladys's open mic, and you know Gladys is famous.
Sure, yeah.
So I started going, and that's when I started meeting people. I met Adam Hunter, Tarun Shetty, and these are guys I'm still really close with today. Mm-hmm. And then there was a phase when those guys left town, is when the new breed came in. You, your buddy Barry, Cerulli, Mike. So, yeah, I feel like, around 2003, that makes sense that we met around that time.
Yeah. So you've been teaching. Do you still teach?
I don't teach. I substitute. I haven't full-time taught since 06 was my last year teaching full-time. And I've been doing, you know, tutoring. I've been teaching part-time. I told you I was teaching at this yeshiva not too far from where your studio is for a year, but only part-time and subbing.
Right.
So I've just been hustling, you know, just wherever, because I said to myself, I'm going to be a comic. I got to do it full, you know, I got to give it my full. You can't worry about a day job getting up. And so the subbing gives me the flexibility, because, you know, we don't always make enough money to survive doing comedy.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It can be rough. What attracted you to teaching?
It was funny because I was always good at, you know, math, and I worked at camps, which tricks you into thinking working with kids is cool. Because I worked at camps, you know, because I'm sure you went to camp as a kid.
I never liked camp. It's funny. It's two different. You and I must be very opposite in some ways, because I hated math and I hated camp.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I hated camp as a kid because my parents used to send me this sleepaway camp. In New York, it was called Surprise Day Camp, and I think we talked about this because Eddie Cantor is their most famous alumni. And actually, the first time I got laughs on stage, I believe I was 11 or 12 years old, and it was at the Eddie Cantor Theater. So I believe there was some magic there. But I never liked camp. That's the only part of camp I liked, because, you know, I was a chubby kid growing up, so I was picked on. I was awkward with the ladies, you know. So at camp is when you got to be slick and ready to pounce on your prey. So,
I don't think I ever introduced the interview. I'm sitting here with Mike Zirklin.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. Math is an interesting one to relate to, because you either love math, I think, or you hate math. There's not too many people. Math is like a polarizing subject, right?
Oh, definitely. It definitely is. I'll tell you quickly my background, why, you know, I was kind of forced into it. It was love-hate, because my dad, you know, was very, you know, grew up in, you know, Soviet Russia under Stalin. And he used to say, oh, you only have 1 hour of math a day. That's not enough. And he would give me extra problems. He would just open up the book and give me extra problems. But I also was ahead of the class. Like, when we'd show up, you know, in fourth grade, I knew how to multiply like double digits and divide double digits, because that's what I spent my summer doing. So I kind of hated it for it, because it was forced down my throat. Mm. And only till I got to high school, where, you know, I was having trouble in all my other subjects, but math, it just became so easy to me. And I started seeing stuff, you know, because, you know, in high school you start doing these like geometry proofs, and then either, like you said, either you get them or you don't. So like, you feel kind of, you start getting this arrogance about you, because your buddy who you knew through 7-8 years of school was always getting the same grades as you, is now failing math because he can't write a geometry proof, and all of a sudden now I'm Einstein, you know. So
You wind up teaching math? Is that what you taught?
No, I taught math. I taught math in the South Bronx for 2 years, and then
in the South Bronx
for 2 years. I had no business being there, man. I was 21 years old when I took my first job, and I'm teaching kids that are 17, 18 years old. And they, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of New York. I went to Albany, University of Albany. So I really didn't know the streets.
Right. You know, you grew up white.
I grew up white. Yeah. Like, you know, and then I'm dealing with some of these kids that, like, just literally got out of Rikers. And Rikers is the jail.
Right.
Of New York City. It has its own island. That's how Rikers notorious island. Rikers yeah. Island. That's how notorious it is. And these kids just got out of Rikers Island, and now I'm going to teach them algebra. It's not happening, Danny. And I had no idea what I was doing.
It sounds like a movie. It sounds like every movie.
It sounds like
where a teacher goes into a black school. And
it was, I mean, as cliche as it sounded, it was as true as it was. And that was my life. And it was so, and I was idealistic, you know, at the time, like, I'm going to get these kids. And I remember getting a call from my old teacher from high school who I stayed in touch with, because he said, oh, he was real happy because he never had a student who went on to teach math. And fast forward a couple of years later, he hired me to teach at, you know, my old high school.
Really?
But yeah, which turned out to be a disaster, which was, like, at the time
you went back to school.
I went back to my old high school, which was awful, because I went from New York City, where basically if you could keep these kids in their seats from killing each other, you're teacher of the year.
Okay, slow down. So let's hear some examples. Can you paint a picture of some particularly bad days?
Well, let me say that my first day of class, a kid turns to me. He says, Mister, what kind of car you drive? I'm like, why do you want to know? He goes, I want to slash your tires. Like, this is literally
my first day.
First day, first interaction.
You didn't tell him then, right?
No, of course not. and it just days like this, and then it was, you know, they all piled up. And I actually started, and I would journal, because that's one of the things they tell you when you're having a bad, you know, bad time as a teacher, is like, journal. See what you're doing wrong. Maybe you said something wrong. Maybe you opened yourself up to that question of what kind of car you're driving so I could slash your tires. I'll tell you here, it was, the kid's name is Reggie Turner, and he's way over 18 now, so I'm sure I could talk about him. And I think he's either dead or he's in prison, because I couldn't see his life changing much. He was very angry, and there's never been a student that I've ever had. Reggie was my first class. He set the bar so high, what awful students were, that there's never been a kid that scared me as much as Reggie has. Like, it was, you know, if your first time on stage, you got booed off at the Apollo, and you went back to being a comic, there's nothing that could ever phase you that way again.
It must have been good for dealing with crowds, actually, right?
It taught me. So, you know, I started later on as the two started doing, because I didn't do comedy till after my second year. Like, I didn't really, because after my first year surviving, I ended up in the hospital for a week. I have Crohn's disease. And one of the things that Crohn's disease is stress brings it, flares, makes it flare up. And like I said, I was so idealistic. I'm not taking a day off. I started getting sick, and I refused to take a day off, where I ended up in the hospital for a week because I refused to. For some reason in my head, because, you know, I had a mentor who was helping me out, and one of his biggest things is keep showing up. You just keep showing up, because a lot of times they'll get a teacher, and then they'll quit after a month. They'll quit after 2 months.
Just like in the movies.
Exactly. Just I'm telling you, man, I wish this was a movie.
A lot of teachers come around here, they just quit on us, Mr. Circling. You made it through the...
You made it to Christmas, man.
Damn. I respect you. I want to turn my life around because of you.
So keep showing up was the thing. So that became my mantra, because I couldn't do anything else right, seemed. So I could show up. That's my other thing. Like, I could be there.
Yeah.
And then I realized that the stress got so out of whack that even showing up was getting impossible.
I told you he cracked, son. We got that Crohn's disease flared up.
But
you can't make it in the South Bronx, Circlin. Sorry. I'm already casting the whole movie in my head.
But it's funny because, you know, I tell these stories, and my buddy, and this is now, we're talking about, this is 97, so this is a long time ago, and I still remember my buddies. We have, like, you know, just tell these, like you say, that you start getting, it's fun when it's not your life. It's funny, obviously.
Do they call you Mr. Circling, or
they call you Mister? They call you Mister.
Hey, Mister! I told you can't make it in the South Bronx, Mister. I want them to call you Mr. Mike for the movie. Yo, Mr. Mike.
Well, I've been called Mr.
Mike. What did I told you? What I told you, son? Look at your tiles. Look at your motherfucking tiles. Slash to shit. Get the hell out of this neighborhood. You don't belong here, white boy. Go back to Albany. I thought I could make it. I will not give up. I don't care how bad the Crohn's disease. Dear diary. You're writing in a journal. journal entry number. No, I'm sorry. I'll let you.
No, it's all good, man. I'm glad I can laugh about it now. But, you know, I'll tell you, but it was, like I said, just show up. I did gain a new respect after I came back from the hospital because they were nicer to me. They were. They're right. Like, all right, we beat this man, sent this man to the hospital, and he came back. He could have stayed. Because yeah. I was living at home with my parents. I really didn't need, it wasn't about
was
the
there
money.
A, was there a slow clap as you entered the classroom? And then it, like, picked up and everyone, he's back. He made it.
The crack is back.
And yo, mister, we thought you was done, son, but. You got heart, you know, I respect that. You was in the joint, not the joint, but the hospital.
Right. Let me tell you the story about Reggie. And this is the moment, because there's been, you know, maybe twice in my teaching career where I thought I was actually going to get hit. Mm-hmm. And one was maybe because it was a fight and I was going to be a victim of circumstance, not they were trying to hit me. So it's, I get a call from, you know, one of the counselors, like, you know, and this is a real bad neighborhood and people are poor and money is tight and everything. I get a call from one of the counselors and it turns out that this boy, Reggie, was gambling with this other boy in class. And I didn't even forget his name. And the mother had to give $10 to this boy or Reggie was going to beat him up. And she gave the money, but wanted to call the school to make sure. So I don't know why she gave the money, but, you know, now she wants the money back and, you know, it's $10. In this neighborhood, $10 is a big deal. And so I go to Reggie's in gym and I'm his counselor. That's why, because this is how bad the school is. Not only am I a first year teacher, you know, just out of school, but now I'm a counselor with no credentials.
And you're 22?
22 at the time. Yeah. I started when I was 21 because my birthday is late in the year. You know, it's like one of those later, you know, when school started, I was 21. I was 22.
And the kids are 17?
They were supposed to be freshmen, but Reggie at the time was 17.
So it's only a 5-year difference between.
Yeah, and he, you know, and he's a 17 in ninth grade still with zero credits. So he's, you know, he's going to the top. That's why I say.
There was a little math I did there.
See, you said you're scared of math. So what happened? So Reggie, I go to Reggie. Reggie, I need that $10 back. I ain't giving no motherfucking money back to nobody. Cursing me, like literally his face and my face are no more than 2 feet apart. I'm like, Reggie, then you have to come with me to the office. I ain't going nowhere, motherfucker, with you. Da 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 da, you motherfucker, bitch. Da da da. Like literally, right in my face. And again, I'm a man. This is, you know, I got to show up. I got to stay tough for these kids. Right. And in my head, I already was hit. I said, I can't back down. If I'm gonna get hit, I'll take the hit. My class is standing right here, and
like, you know, physically hit,
because he was literally in my face.
Right.
I'm telling him to come with me and I didn't want to back down. What am I, you know, I can't say, okay, Reggie, you stay here, buddy. I'm just going to, cause if Reggie doesn't have to listen to me, why should any one of them have to listen to me? So again, I had to stand my ground. I'm like, if I'm going to get hit, let me get hit.
This is act two.
But quickly the lesbian gym teacher jumps in between us and says, Reggie, get your ass down to that office right now. Uh-huh. And he leaves, you know, because he's
saved obviously by a lesbian.
Exactly. So he's obviously scared more of the lesbian than this cracker from New City. And then to tie the bow on the Reggie story. And I say in certain ways I respected him because he dropped out of school when he turned 18. He just knew. He's like, this is not the place. Because a lot of these kids will just come to school, hang out, whatever, go. But he knew as soon as he was 18, he signed himself out. I respected him for that. And then.
Why? Why'd you respect that?
Because it's like, because I just feel a lot of these a-holes will come to school like to waste their time because they're 18, but they're still afraid of their mothers. Yeah. Who yell at them? So you get your ass to, you know, get your ass to school and learn something. And they obviously take up space, and they're more than just take up space. Because a kid like Reggie, you know, who I have to discipline, who I have to, you know, chase around the classroom, or I have to find out where he went when he took the pass and's gone for a half hour. Mm-hmm. It takes away my time from teaching. You know, all this is distractions. And
so it hurts the other people.
It hurts the other people. And there was I had a professor at school. I went to Lehman College, got my master's in education, and he would say that he thinks that every good student should have a class action suit against every bad student and their parents. Mm-hmm. Because especially in public school, like these kids take away, because every time I have to stop and say, you know, Danny, stop talking. Danny, stop joking around. I imagine you were a bit of a class clown.
Yeah.
Every time that your teacher had to stop the class and say, Danny, stop this, Danny, stop that, is even, you know, it takes away from, you know, him or her teaching or helping with somebody who can't solve, you know, an algebra problem or has trouble, you know, understanding, you know, the Korean War or something.
Right.
Who knows? Whatever their class is, every time one of these kids takes away from another student, they're losing their education.
My whole attitude towards you shifted, and I have to shift it back. As soon as you made yourself the teacher and me the student, I started being like pissed at you. Oh yeah, you want to know something?
But you know, and then also yeah. like, and I don't want to get into too much. But if you read why education fails, is all these things that I bring up. And what happened was, the longer I got into education, like I would have to leave education regardless, even if I didn't become a comic, because I just became bitter towards it. Because our system is just so fucked up right now that I couldn't see, like, and all my idealism went out the window. Like, I just think we should have to pull it down and start all over again. Like, that's why you have all these charter schools, you have all these homeschooling going on. Because honestly, these schools have just become dangerous. And I'm not even talking about the school shootings. I'm just talking about, you know, drugs, sex, everything. Like, you don't understand how much your kid is bombarded with the second they walk in that door. And now with the internet and all this, it's not, you know, even when it was dangerous when we went to school,
it's terrible.
It's terrible. And there's a great book. And if anybody's interested in this, The End of Education, I believe his name is Levin, and he's the humanities chair or something at NYU, or was when he wrote this. And I forget his name. I think it's Neil or something, but it's The End of Education. And not only tells you what's wrong with education, but what we need to do to fix it. So it's not like one of those books, well, this is what's wrong and that's what's wrong. But he right. actually lists five things, what's wrong and what we should be doing.
What are some of his suggestions?
Well, one of the things, and then I didn't realize this, is education. You know? Education has become so like prostituted. Is that the right word? Where it's become
poured out.
Yeah, poured out. Because what did they bang into Danny's head all the way when you were being bad? When you were, how do they try to fix your behavior? Danny, if you don't do well in this class, you're not going to go to college. If you don't go to college, you're not going to get a
degree.
And then you're not going to get a
master's degree?
No. But what comes after you get your degree?
A job.
And yeah. so we worship the god of money. And it's the other thing you were saying, it's, you know, like it's cool to be not good at math. But okay, mm-hmm. so imagine you and I are at a party and mm-hmm. you know, you and I are at a party and you say to me, oh, what do you do? And I say, oh, I'm a math teacher. Oh, I hated math. I couldn't do math in school. I hated
right,
it.
Right, right.
And then everybody laughs, like, oh, I hated math too. And we all get a good laugh at it. And then
you feel alienated. No, you have to go do a math problem.
Don't
quietly
forget, I'm
yourself.
Arrogant, so I don't feel arrogant. Okay. I just feel that you guys can't communicate on my level. That's all.
Okay.
So that's where the math person goes, no. But then 2 minutes later, we run into somebody else and you're like, hey, what do you do? It's like, oh, man, I can't read. Then all those people who are applauding are now sad and trying to get this person help. But to me, it's the same. When you can't say I can't do math, is the same as you saying I can't read. Because to me, there's gaps in your
different language.
It's a numbers different language, letters, but it's a gap in your education. There's something missing there. And obviously now computers and calculators. But I think it's even more important. And you know, that's
so. Why is math on the same level as reading to you? Why is it so as important?
It's just as because if you don't know. You know, if you don't know math and if you don't know, like, if you know how to read, that's fine. And you know how to write, you know how to mm-hmm. communicate, but knowing math, it would just help in your everyday, you know, everyday life, you know, everything, mm-hmm. you know, you figure out one thing here. So if you don't know math and you go get this credit card, it's 22% interest, 23% interest. You don't have good credit, whatever it is. And mm-hmm. I'm just associating people who don't know math as poor. But you're conned into some kind of game like this, and then you don't realize how much interest you're paying, or like you know, I hear these payday loans because I listen to the hip hop station. So I listen to these payday loans.
To remind you of the old days.
Yeah. And then, and it's just, again, there's somebody's getting punished because they don't understand how compound interest works. They're like, all right, man, it's only 22%. That's not bad. You know, it's $22 on every 100. That's not bad. But they don't realize it's compound interest. That's why they're never paying off that credit card. And they're a slave to their credit card. They're a slave to their bad auto loan, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like that's where it could hurt you. Knowing math lets you understand so many other things. Because if you don't know.
Such as what?
Like physics and chemistry and the sciences, because math is that language. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, oh, I want to be a chemist or I want to be a physicist. They know they have to learn the language of math. Or if you want to go into business or into stocks, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's a language all its own. And I'm not saying everybody has to be able to solve linear equations and matrices and stuff, but everybody should be proficient on a certain level, you know, that they could feel comfortable and they don't have to be at a party and say, oh, I hated math and math is so-and-so.
I think the Greeks are the ones who got math going, right?
Yes.
Which is a perfect lead into our philosopher, because we're going to be talking about a guy named Plutarch. Plutarch? Am I saying it right?
Well, they have it. Yeah, no, I think you're right. Plutarch, because they have it down, broken down.
Plutarch.
Right, Plutarch, yeah.
Plutarch. So what you and Plutarch have in common is that you were born in Rome.
It's true.
And see, Alex does his research here. And Plutarch was a Roman citizen, although he was not born one. So that's it. So he was Greek. I'm not wrong about that, but yeah. He was a Roman citizen.
Well, you know, I talk about the Greeks, and for the Greeks, math was a religion. A lot of people, you know, Pythagoras, you know, mm-hmm. you know, everybody knows who Pythagoras, not, yeah, well, I assume everybody knows Pythagoras.
The theorem.
For, you know, the right triangle theorem. But it wasn't Pythagoras who discovered it, because the Egyptians knew about it. That's how they built the pyramids. It was somebody in his school, his cult, that proved it, but he took all the credit for it. So that's how it goes. Even back then, people are stealing ideas.
Like, people have writers now, you know?
Well, the other thing that mathematicians will tell you, and it'll blow your mind, is if there are advanced life forms, aliens out there, the only true constant in the universe is math. So if we did ever find a way to communicate with them, it would be through math.
So we'd be speaking math with them?
Somehow. That would be the first form of communication that we would have with them.
That's incentive, because they're only going to let the math people live.
I speak alien?
I know it's... I always thought that, you know, people put so much effort into the clothes that they buy for their kid, the food that they feed their kid, the everything. These parents are like so crazy about their kid. When it comes to the person who the kid is going to spend most of the year with, they don't care so much. The teacher is the least of the priorities. It's so bizarre. You'd think that these people would be so, like, hell-bent on, like, who is influencing my kid every day? There should be so many background checks. They should be, like, you know, really, like, interrogating the school. Like, is this person there for the right reasons? Are they passionate about what they're teaching? But really, they're just like, nah. You know? Everything, yeah, but
it's some I feel that way. Some definitely. But it's funny, because if you talk to, like, the wealthy... You know, people in power, people that come from money.
Right.
They know the one constant in everything in keeping their money, keeping, you know, their power, mm-hmm. is education. That's the one constant. Whatever formula you want to use, this guy made his money, you know, shoveling shit for 25 years and became rich. Mm-hmm. Whatever that person, I guarantee you, that shit shoveler, their kids, they're going to send to the best schools they could afford. They're going to find... Because they're not a shit shoveler, because if you know, that shit shoveler is going to want to keep that shit shoveling money.
I love the name, the word shit shoveler.
That shit, but you know, you're going to want to keep that shit shoveler fortune, because, you know, then, right. you know, when you don't want your kids to go blow away that shit shoveler fortune. Right. So you send them to the best school. You try to get them to Harvard and to Yale and to Princeton, because they want to, you know, because the rich stay with the rich, because it doesn't matter what you did in Harvard. You got that degree, you know, especially in our profession. If you were on that Lampooner, you and I would both have sweet writing jobs right now.
Yeah.
You know, like the same thing. And, you know, same thing if you went to, you know, study business at Harvard, I'm sure you'd be working at some sweet.
I was shocked when I interned at the Colbert Report, because all the writers were Ivy League. And I was like, they should all be guys that came out of the comedy clubs. We're the funniest guys. And then I realized, you know, the reality of the situation is that all the writers of the late night shows, like you said, are coming from the Ivy League school,
and,
which is not what you think when you're watching comedy. You're not thinking that that's where it's coming from.
But that's like, that's the one thing you could see. The thread is education. It doesn't matter, you know, shit shoveler, maybe he didn't finish high school, but he's damn for shit sure he's not going to give away all the
sure he's not going to shit shovel anymore.
He's not shit shoveling anymore, and he's not going to give away the shit shoveling fortune to his kids who are idiots. You know, he's not going to let them go to public school, It's and then one of the things, if you believe in conspiracies and all this, is why the schools in you know, the South Bronx are shitty, and why the schools in Compton and Watts are so shitty, is because if those schools were good, what happens is that's more competition for shit shoveling kids' fortune. You know, because my shit shoveling kids,
Make it confusing with the example shit shoveling. So, the rich kids.
The rich kids. Sorry. Yeah. So sorry, but the rich kid. you know, maybe they've got average intelligence, but they went to the best prep schools, and now I get them tutors 8 hours a day. And then you got a kid from, you know, you got a kid from Watts who's got above average intelligence.
Keep the poor poor, in other words.
Exactly. It's a vicious cycle. It's like what they call a vicious, you know, the vicious cycle of education, vicious cycle.
Do you believe
it,
having been on the inside?
I believe, yeah, I definitely do believe it. Yeah, oh, I believe it wholeheartedly. It just to see the money that's like wasted on certain things. Like we, like, again, like I said, my first year of education, I was a counselor. I was a math teacher. I was a science teacher. I had no business being one of those things, let alone all three of them. Mm-hmm. Why did I have to do it? Because that school had no more money for anything else. But yet they were sending me away on these to learn this math program, interactive math program. I could talk about it, I don't care. You know, and it was in the right program. Mm-hmm. It was in the right program, but they would send the training. They'd send me, you know, $42 an hour for 8 hours a day. You know, this, you, how much? And then, you know, all, and then you look around the room and there's 50 of these people. So they're paying 50 people, $42 an hour for all this, where I think that money should have been spent maybe getting computers for the school, or maybe hiring a counselor or hiring another science teacher. No, because money was going for this new program, because this is what these kids are going to be doing.
Is it possible that the administration were just idiots?
It's a huge, there, especially New York City Board of Ed, and it's a huge bureaucracy. And if you look at how many employees they have, I think they have about 80,000 employees, which makes them a Fortune 500 company. But it's a Fortune 500 company run like a public, you know, like all like screwy, because if GMC or if, you know, Ford or anybody, IBM or Apple ran their companies the way that New York City did, they'd be bankrupt. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they get all this funding and it's crazy. It's just, I just think it's just the bureaucracy is, it's screwed up. And
I think that education is probably the number one thing holding society back in general. Just if you look at, I've always, whenever I wind up talking about the Middle East, I always talk about how the conflict is really just a matter of how they're educating the kids. You know, Palestinian kids are taught, hate Israeli kids and
oh, yeah.
And vice versa. And is in, if you remove yourself from it all, you know, that's why whenever I meet Palestinians in America, they're like so far removed. You can see outside of the system because you're not in it. And you can see how ridiculous it all is.
Oh, yeah.
How we're all just people. And it, but when you're in the little bubble, you cannot see outside of it. And they start you when you're a kid and they program you wrong. And it's education that manipulates everything that's going on in the world, I think.
Yeah.
You know, people think it's just a few years at the beginning. I think it's really a bigger conspiracy than what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, and it's a huge, no, there's now in this, and as that's why, like, I've drawn to comics, because comics, like, you see it, mm-hmm. you know, any comic who's worth their weight, anybody who calls themselves, sees, like, the injustice, inequality, you know, unless they're doing props or something. But even then, if you call yourself a comic, you must see something's not right with the world and where things are, you know, obviously out of whack. And that's why, you know, this DAO in this country is an anti-intellectual movement. It's been going on, I think, for the past 20 years, I would say, where, you know, somebody like me who's into math and all this, where it's easy to just blow them off. Oh, we don't have to learn math. Or you tell your kids, oh, you use the calculator, use this. But, you know, yet our competitors, China, India, all they do is math. You know, not saying that everybody should
because
be studying.
They don't want to get attacked when the aliens come.
But there is definitely, I'm glad you see it too, and I'm sure other people see it. There is an anti-intellectual movement in this country.
And I think it's also, you know, like I said, around the world, there are economic and social interests that are behind who's getting educated by who and why and how. And it manipulates the entire world's interactions, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Oh, yeah, like, and then you have heroes, you create heroes where in Afghanistan, you had a girl got shot for going to school. Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy where, and then you show an American kid this where they're just sitting around goofing off in class or whatever, and you got some girl risking her life, gets shot to go to school, and you're just sitting here and it's like not a big deal for you, like whatever, it's gonna be here tomorrow, it's gonna be here, you know, I'll go to summer school. If I screw this up, I'll just do it again. Whatever.
What do you attribute all the school shootings to now? Why now more than in the past?
There's a couple things. If you go to the conspiracy idea, You know, if I let my mind work.
This is what happens when you have a teacher who smokes a lot of pot.
Well, I also, did, and it's funny to talk about smoking pot because that's the first conspiracy as a 16-year-old kid you uncover when you start smoking pot. Because, you know, again, pot's bad, pot's awful, it's whatever, it's gateway drug, it's going to kill her. And then you start smoking pot and you're like, this is pretty fucking awesome. Like, what else did they lie about? If they lied about pot, what else did they lie about? And then you start looking around and saying, why is pot illegal and this is legal? So, yeah, obviously it starts. That was what sent me down the rabbit hole, as you say. But any government, when they really want to control you, what's the only, like, real control is what? They could throw you in prison. And how can they throw you in prison? Because they have guns. How could we protect ourselves if something goes down is with our guns? You know, if our gun becomes tyrannical and, you know, they say, that's it, we're taking all the people, you know, if you don't do this or that, we're taking you in, you know, whatever. They become tyrannical. So our only defense is our guns, because that's true power. So the conspiracy view is that these are more staged than you think. And there's, you know, things going on. And the reason they're doing these school shootings is they're going to have such an uproar of, oh my God, stop killing our kids, take away all the guns. Because honestly, whose guns do you take away is anybody who follows the law. Because, oh yeah, because every criminal is just going to turn in their guns and be, oh yeah, I'm getting a hand back my guns. So honestly, the only people who get affected are the law-abiding citizens who said, all right, you know, I can't have my automatic weapon, I can't do this. And then, you know, and then I think it's also just, again, why they're happening more rapidly. So if it's not the conspiracy, they're not being staged. If they're not being staged, I think it's just, again, the media, mass media that we get is different from you and I. Like, there's just such a huge gap. Like, the way we grew up, like, we were just on the outside of the internet. You know, maybe you remember, you know, I remember the AOL, getting those AOL things in the mail, 100 minutes, 100 hours, whatever it was. Right. So that was like my first exposure. But I was already an adult, basically, when the internet came. Yeah. But I could only imagine growing up in this, you know, when you see these images. And we live in a violent society. I don't, you know, maybe the 80s is the only time. And even then we had like Granada and all those, Panama. But so we've been
in the internet is basically to blame for the more school shootings, people.
I would think it's a combination. It's like the perfect storm.
You're making the same argument that people make against video games, right?
No. I would say it's a perfect storm. I would say that, A, number one is we live in a violent society. You agree with that? We've been at war, you know, now for the past 10-something years.
Yeah.
And number two is where in Europe, where they're more open about, like, about sex and, you know, you could see boobs on TV and all that stuff. Right. And you could see all that. Where in America, that would, you know, almost it corrupted the whole nation by seeing, you know, Janet Jackson's nipple, you know, that corrupted the whole nation. But yet you could show as much shooting up and killing as you want on, you know, TV and all this. So those images get in there. And I think the video games don't lead to it, but it makes it easier. And again, it goes to the conspiracy that a lot of people believe the government's funding these video games because all the new weapons are used just like a PlayStation or Xbox remote. That's all the new weapons out there.
So they're teaching the next soldiers.
So they're teaching the next soldiers through these video games. And that's why maybe some of them snap and they just go out and they start saying, you know, if I get bullied enough, I'm going to go shoot up my school. And
so what we need on TV is more boobs, less bombs.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying, Mr.
more,
Circle?
I'm for it. More boobs, less bombs. I think we live in a violent society is number one reason. And then all those other reasons will lead to it.
So let's go back to our guy. Let's go back to Plutarch.
Plutarch, yeah.
Plutarch. He sounds like an alien leader. Plutarch from Quadrant 5, Sector 7. In his work Morelia, Plutarch states that the mind, body, and soul shape each other. The mind creates reason. The body creates experiences that affect the other two. And lastly, the soul lasts forever in reincarnation and retains what the mind and body put into it. It is up to us to feed our souls so they can move on to the next life with good knowledge.
I definitely agree. You know, it goes back to what I was saying when, like right now, my Crohn's disease is in remission, you know, as we Jews say, knock on wood.
Yeah, that's not real wood. It's compressed.
Okay, but knock on something.
Knock on compressed wood.
Knock on compressed wood. So it's definitely in remission. Why is it? Because I was able to control, like, I can't let stress take me down that path again. I can't say to myself, I'm going in every day, even though I'm getting sick. I can't, I have to learn. No. So definitely the fact that I can control through control my stress levels and say, all right, that's my mind, because my mind makes my body all out of whack. It stresses my body out. So then the Crohn's flares up. I lose weight. I get sick. You know, it's a vicious cycle. You break out. So I broke out of that.
Yeah.
So definitely agree with the mind, body, and soul.
Huh. So you've got an inside window to it more than anybody in a way. Yeah. Keep the soul and the mind calm, and the body you can control the Crohn's and stay away from, what was the kid's name?
Reggie Turner.
Stay away from the Reggie.
Oh, so let me tell you a quick Reggie Turner story. We got sidetracked.
Yeah.
So the last time I saw him, it was my second year. I came back, and in my mentor, this guy Brian Osborne, I'll talk about him. He's now the superintendent of Orange School District, which you know is a great school district in New Jersey. Great school district.
Okay.
He was my mentor.
You assumed I knew that.
Well, I mean, Orange County. Yeah, so it's a good school district.
Okay.
So he's now the superintendent of that school district. But he was my mentor, you know, that helped me out. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have survived as long as I did in teaching. Mm-hmm. So my second year was so much better than my first year. It was, you couldn't tell that it was only 1 year separating them. That's how great. Mm-hmm. And just from his help and putting in the work and all that. So, you know, I just run into Reggie in the hallway, and I think he had a certain respect for me because I didn't back down to him, and I actually and I tried with as much as I could with him. And I ran into him, hey, Circle, what's up, man? And, you know, give him, you know, the old, you know, give him the old ghetto hug, you know, with the one arm over the back. So, you know, so I felt like a certain respect with him. Fast forward to the end of the day, find out that the reason he was at school was he had beef with some kid in the neighborhood, but the kid was avoiding him. But Reggie's a tough guy. He can't have some kid get away with you know, he had to settle the score. Right. So he decided it was a good idea to go to school, walk into a classroom. It was a female teacher who was teaching. It was a substitute. She didn't know who he was. She couldn't stop him. Again, he's bigger than she is, you know, and he walks over to this kid, sitting at the desk, beats the shit out of him in his desk, and just walks out of the room like nothing happened.
Jeez.
Yeah. So maybe fast forward, if this happened, you know, last year, maybe he would have shot him, but, you know, thank God he didn't. Yeah. So it was me who identified Reggie to the police. They're like, did you see Reggie Turner at the school? Because he fit the description, but nobody had seen him, you know, to identify him that he was in fact him that day. So I talked to the police and said, yeah, I saw Reggie. He said hi to me.
We ghetto hugged.
Yeah, we ghetto hugged him. And that was it. So either, you know, hopefully I hope Reggie got his shit together, because he wasn't stupid by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that was the problem. I think when you're not stupid or ignorant, like, he knew enough to know that his life was shitty.
Yeah.
And people had it better than him. So he was angry.
Yeah.
You know, and he knew enough, and he had enough intelligence, but he just couldn't get it together enough. To
he's
get through
a gangster
school.
To walk in and beat a guy up.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's
wow,
according to some folklore, he is one of the original Bloods when they came over to New York. Because, you know, we didn't really have a gang problem until the early 2000s.
So he's famous.
Yeah. So he could be. So after this interview, he could be looking for me and you.
Is that why you threw in that he's a smart guy?
Yes. No, he was smart.
It kind of looked like a protective clause. Like, he's going to walk into the interview and just beat you up and leave.
So that was
Circling. You betrayed a ghetto hug. I ghetto hugged you and you sold me out. Never betray a ghetto hug. That shit is forever.
But, you know, I know the back. You know, I feel like we came from similar backgrounds. Can you imagine ever happening in a day of school where you see some kid who didn't go to school there anymore just show up in class and beat the shit out of?
No.
Like, it happened, like, where they would meet him after school in the backyard. Like, that happens all the time. But to walk into another teacher, the chutzpah, you know, on this kid.
On top of everything else, Reggie had that terrible chutzpah. And it is said in folklore that one of the original Bloods had a mean chutzpah.
A lot of chutzpah for this kid.
All right, you want to read us some of Plutarch's writing?
Sure.
I am Plutarch. I am your leader from ancient Greece.
Okay, so here, so I'm quoting Plutarch. The soul, being eternal after death, is like a caged bird that has been released. If it has been a long time in the body and has become tamed by many affairs and long habit, the soul will immediately take another body and once again become involved in the troubles of the world. The worst thing about old age is that the soul's memory of the other world grows dim, while at the same time, its attachment to things of this world becomes so strong that the soul tends to retain the form that it had in the body. But that soul, which remains only a short time within a body, until liberated by the higher powers, quickly recovers its fire and goes on to higher things.
So basically, that's why only the good die young.
I guess so. That's what it seems
Billy
like.
Billy Joel rewrote this.
Seems like he's advocating for you to just check out, dude.
Only the good die young. Only the good die young.
You know what I think when I read that about the soul, old, that soul retaining its old form is, you know, you've heard the saying, you know, I don't know if anybody's used it with you, but that, oh, that person's got an old soul.
Yeah.
You know, you meet a kid, even though they're like 8 years old, they seem like they're 35, like some of the stuff they're talking about. Right. Like, so maybe, right. maybe that, that maybe idea of old soul.
That's recycled.
Recycled.
You know, your mother said I could give you was a math education. She never cared for me. Anyway.
It's funny. I ran it. So I'm in Village Lantern.
Yeah.
It's 2 a.m. And I'm with my girlfriend at the time. You remember, I think you remember her, Danielle.
Yeah.
She's the waitress. So I'm with my girlfriend at the time. It's 2 a.m. Village Lantern. Everybody's drunk. It's awful. Awful spot. It's one of those spots you always say, what the fuck did I, why did I come here?
Right.
Why did I come here? I get off stage. Girl comes over to me. He's like, I think you were my teacher. And she's like, and then I'm looking at her. She's beautiful, beautiful, 20-something-year-old black girl,
mm-hmm.
gorgeous. I think you were my teacher. And then she says the school, the
yeah.
New School for Arts and Sciences. That's where I met Mr. Reggie Turner.
Yeah.
And soon she said that, I remembered her. And, oh, man. And so, fuck, she's hot.
Damn. Now I'm going to teach you all kinds of new shit. Ghetto hug me. Come on.
That Billy Joel song reminded me.
Yeah.
And I always wonder if I wasn't with my... Because I always said in my head, it's like, I can't date an old student. I can't date an old student.
Really?
Where my girlfriend is 8 years younger than me, my current girl, the one I live with now.
Yeah.
And she's 8 years younger than me, where, you know, I could, where I was. No, she could have been. I was teaching when she was in high school. I could have,
right.
you know, so I was like, she could have been a student, but she wasn't. So that's good. I always think in my head, like, would I date an old student? And obviously, I would smoke weed with old students. But when I date an old student.
We'll make for a good role play anyway, right? I'm the professor. You know how it goes. All right, let's do the quotes.
Okay, so quotes. It is a true proverb that if you live with a lame man, you will learn a limp.
Lame man?
Lame man. You will learn a limp.
In other words, if you live with someone who's got a handicap, you'll take on their handicap?
I think so, but I think it's probably more, it's, I don't think it's as literal as you think it is. I think it's, you know, it's it goes back to like that whole idea of, you know, the secret and all that positive thinking bullshit. And it's true because you could look at, you know, if you live with somebody who's a nasty fucker, you know, and they're just nasty, spewing negativity all the time, you know you're going to take, you could be the sweetest, nicest person. Well, you're going to take some of that on. You're going to become, you know, as sweet as you are, you might become 10% nastier just because you're just bombarded with that shit all the time. You
mm-hmm.
know, so.
Okay. So people.
You buy that?
Yeah. The people who are around you affect you.
Oh, definitely. You know.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. And okay, so let me read this one. Fate leads him who follows it and drags him who resists it.
Leads he who follows it and drags he who resists it. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and going back, you know, also, you know, I smoke pot too, obviously, so I'm more into like being a hippie and, you know, going with the flow of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Go on. I'm listening.
Yeah, no. Like we were talking about, because I told you about my car. You know, my car died and all that. I got to get a new car and all this. Or maybe I was telling your brother. And, you know, I could have been, oh man, this is the worst. You know, obviously it wasn't a great day when my car died, but I could have been just really, oh man, this sucks. And my car is dead. This is awful. But it's like, I just, you know, this was the way the universe worked. You know, my car, I drove it for so many years. It was time to move on. It's time for me to get a new car. This is the universe telling me this is the next, even though it's a, you know, it's a silly example, whatever, but you know, you take enough of these and then you think about how, you know, like as you and I are comics and, you know, we've been doing it long enough, but when we were younger in the comedy game, we didn't get a spot at Joe Franklin's or we didn't get a spot at Stand Up New York or New York Comedy Club, or we were upset and like,
yeah.
Oh man,
it used
why
to crush
is,
me.
Yeah. It used to cry. I'd be like, why is so-and-so doing it, man? That's not fair. I should be up on that
right.
stage. And then if once you realize there's no way Danny Lobel could be on 16 stages at once, you know, mm-hmm. you pick your stages and that's the stage you're on. And then sometimes you might be doing 6 shows
right.
in one night, or sometimes you might be doing no shows for a week. It's just,
and it's all a bigger part of it. It's all part of a bigger master plan, and you have to sort of accept it. And then you can let the fate sort of pick you up and move into the river of the river of dreams. I'll just keep it doing. Keep doing Billy Joel references. But yeah, I mean, I guess you can either be carried like a river through life by fate, or you can try and swim against the current, which is, but you're still going to get pulled. That's pretty much what he's saying.
Oh yeah, exactly. Either way, it's going to go. And obviously there's shitty things happen. You know, people, you know, God forbid people die, people get sick.
Right.
You know, you lose your job, you break up with your girlfriend, you know, I'm not saying don't be sad, but you have to realize, you know, that's the way the universe is taking you.
And if you swim with the current, that's how you succeed, I guess.
Exactly. And then you and I and anybody else that's a stand up or whatever, we have even less right to complain about certain things because we chose this path. You know, shitty as stuff gets for me, and you know, I always think about, oh, I was making so much money when I was working, because I was working in New Rochelle. I had tenure and all this. And
yeah. Oh, you had tenure?
Yeah, tenure. I had my own apartment in the Bronx, dude. I was living the American.
You walked away from tenure?
Yeah. I was living the American dream, but, you know, I got up every morning. Like, I feel like I was putting on somebody else's clothes because this wasn't my dream. This is not where I want. Because, you know, I had a beautiful girlfriend. I had an apartment in the city.
You're like, this is not my beautiful girl. This is not my beautiful life.
It's not Billy Joel anymore.
No. And the days go on. I'm just gonna keep quoting songs.
That's my life is one of these 80s songs. So
yeah.
But yeah. So I walked away from all that stuff. And for me, I can't. You know, even when I'm like broke and I can't realize I can't afford it, like the new car I want and all this stuff, because I chose this. I could have stayed in New Rochelle. I could have. You know, I chose this. You chose to come out here. You chose.
Well, I mean, for me, it was, you know, I became a comedian because I wanted to become a comedian, but it's clear that you did it just to duck Reggie Turner. You just wanted to do a teacher protection program.
You know, one day I'm going to be, you know, it's funny. One day I'm going to be sitting and my big break is coming, and then the executive sitting across the desk is Reggie Turner.
I was thinking you're sitting there about to sign your sitcom deal, and Reggie just walks in and beats the shit out of you and walks out.
So.
We couldn't stop him, sir. You never betray a ghetto hug.
Oh, funny.
I ghetto hugged you, circling. That means something.
I tell you, so more Reggie Turner stuff just pop up. You appreciate this. Reggie walks out of my class one day, just leaves, never comes back. And again, I have to be the adult. I have to keep order. I could have ignored this, let him do whatever he wanted, but I felt like I had to make my stand. So somebody's call his house, call his house. Never calls house. After this phone call, never called it again. And call up his house and be like, answer, praise Jesus. That's how the phone is answered. Praise Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm like, can I speak to Ms. Turner? Speaking. Miss Turner, Reggie didn't, you know, took the pass today and never came back to class. Reggie yelling on the phone. Reggie picks up the other line. This is how these are now landlines. I don't know your viewers, your listeners are familiar with these, but it's a landline. Reggie picks up the other line. Yeah, Mom. He's yelling at her. Reggie, this man says you did not come back to class after you took the pass. He's lying on me, Mom. I came back to class. I'm like, no, Miss Turner, Reggie never came back to class. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, you know.
Shut the fuck up, circling what I told you.
But yeah, he made me. So then after this, I never called Reggie's house again.
Why? Because he kept insisting you were lying?
Yeah, he kept insisting. The mother believed him. She's like, okay, Reggie, next time you go to the bath, you make sure you check in with this man when you come back. I'm like, okay, ma'am, thank you. And everybody hangs up on the phone. Like, basically, I was beaten over the phone.
Reggie runs Reggie's household.
And so the next day, like, we're doing, because again, I taught science. I had to teach science at the school. The next day, we're doing a popcorn experiment.
Uh-huh.
Every time I turn around, popcorn is hitting the board.
Uh-huh. Good sound effect.
Yeah, popcorn. Like, yeah. Popcorn hits the board. Turn around. Who's doing that? Nobody says a word.
I don't know if that's the right sound effect, but it's not. I like it anyway.
But just giving you an idea. Yeah, yeah, so every time I turn around, like hitting the board.
Okay.
Who's doing that? Nobody says a word.
Oh, I like that second one too. What was that one? Some clicking.
So
okay.
And so nobody says a word.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Later on, all of a sudden, the plastic bottle, you know, one of those like 1 liter, not the 1 liter, you know, those 20 ounce Cokes or whatever, comes whizzing by my head. Hits the board. And that wasn't that loud, but okay. All right, but you got an idea. So hits the board. I'm like, all right, who did that? Now I got to go over the top. Who's did? So I pull out one kid who I think did it, and I'm not going to pull out Reggie because I knew it was him.
Right.
And I pull out one kid, and I'm like, who did it? I can't say a word. I can't say a word. Finally, end of the class comes. I'm just beaten again.
Yeah.
You know, just another day at school. And one of the girls who felt, I think – you know, because I, you know what it was? I didn't realize that I was a hot, I was the hot teacher. I didn't realize I was the hot teacher. But there was, I, at one point in my career, I was the hot teacher. Because again, I was 22.
Yeah.
You know, didn't have the beard, you know,
okay.
I had the gleam in my eyes still. So I was the hot teacher. So this girl, I, either she had a crush on me or she felt bad for me, comes up to me after school. She goes, you know, Mr., it was Reggie who kept throwing those things at you. I'm like, yeah, I had a feeling. Thank you, so-and-so.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I never followed up on this because I can't bring her in and say, you know, Reggie. So, like, because I learned from the phone call, Reggie is better left to Reggie. Let him.
Right.
So, but, yeah, he taught me a lot of lessons.
You're not the teacher from the movie who brings Reggie around in the end. You're the one who sells him out to the cops.
Oh, yeah.
You're not the one who shows Reggie a bright future. You're the one who's like, fuck you, Reggie.
That's where he lives, officer, right there. All right.
All right. You want to do the jump last
into
quote,
this
quote here?
Yeah, let's just jump into this quote here. The correct analogy for the mind is not a vessel that needs filling, but wood that needs igniting. Suppose someone were to go and ask his neighbors for fire and find a substantial blaze there and just say there, continually warming himself, that is no different from someone who goes to someone else to get to some of his rationality and fails to realize that he ought to ignite his own flame. Hmm. Oh, okay, so I get it. So he sees his neighbor warming himself. So instead...
So don't try and go learn off other people. Go figure it out for yourself.
Exactly.
Light your own fire.
Yeah, perfect, yeah.
Which is against the whole concept of this show. Where I'm trying to learn off other people. But
No, but you learn through... But what we're doing here is an open discussion. So you're not just... I'm not coming here and just force-feeding you some facts. We're doing an open discussion. And this is part of education. And this is what's missing when...
Oh, that's a distinction. It's basically... It's think for yourself. But you know... It takes fire to light other fire.
Exactly. Maybe? What you need, like, again, what did you come to me to get? Maybe you got wood or you got a match or you got something. You need something from me.
So go over to your neighbor, bring your wood, light it on his fire, but then don't just combine it with his fire. Bring it and make your own little bonfire and jump around it like a Rumpelstiltskin.
Just go crazy with fire. Just light everything on fire.
Yeah.
So I guess they busted a couple... kids that started those fires.
Yeah.
I heard on the radio talk about fires.
Here in LA.
Here in LA. We had a big fire in Gardenia. So they went out and started their own fire, obviously. So
yeah.
And they didn't learn.
And they were in questioning and they said, we didn't start the fire. It was always burning. It wraps it up nicely.
I think so. It's a nice tiny little bow.
I wish I had the rights to like Billy Joel music. I could play us out with, we didn't start the fire. It goes on and on. And then like over that, I'd be like, Mike, thanks for being here. And you'd be like,
yep.
Thank you. My man, I'm next to Nixon. Don. I don't know all the ones. Peter Pan, Disneyland. We didn't start the fire. All right, Mike. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Danny. I had a lot of fun. It was good talking and a lot of ideas exchanged is what it's all about, hopefully.
Yeah, I learned something, and I'll tell you what. For the first time ever, I think I want to take another look at math. You made it seem interesting, and I just don't want to be a victim when the aliens attack.
That's right. Learn math for aliens, for your overlords.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Everybody, thanks so much for tuning into the show. That was our penultimate episode of the season. Next week's our season finale. I'm excited for that. Thank you, Mike Cirklin, for being my guest. Thank you, everybody, for being the listeners. Go to moderndayphilosophers.net and donate some money to the show. Like PBS, we are supported by listeners like you, and specifically you. I could really use the help. So please go to moderndayphilosophers.net, make a donation of $20 or more, and I will send you a thank you of some Tweaked Audio earbuds, which you can also buy at tweakedaudio.com with promo code MDP for 1/3 off and free shipping. All right. If you have any time this week, I'd really appreciate it if you jump on iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and a nice comment. Help boost us up in those charts. Let's move forward. Move forward and build. Build and move and all that kind of stuff. All right. Well, that's about it. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Email me at thecomical@yahoo.com. Say hello. Love to hear from you always. And have a great week, everybody. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.